It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1, with Harvell and Collins, the folks at Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. They're joining us today. And I just want to remind the audience, if you have any interest in talking to either of the hosts of this program, Cecil Harvell or Wes Collins, don't hesitate to give them a call locally, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And remember to spell out the word and. And with that, good afternoon to you, Cecil.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
And Wes, good afternoon to you as well.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
So the topic today, we're going to continue a conversation on elder abuse and the issues associated with that, I understand.
Last week, Lockwood, we did. We touched on Wes and I are seeing more and more frequently where our elder population is the subject to, you know, not only abuse, that's been around for a while, but recently more telephone and internet fraud to the point that some of our clients have gone to the bank and wired money to strangers, and they've lost that money, and there's very little that we can do about it. We also have had a couple of files in our office where folks have been infirm and subject to influence and have deeded their property through a purported deed to someone other than their known beneficiary. What we want to review real quickly, and then I have a couple of cases that Wes will talk about in terms of clearing the title to some of these files where people have unfortunately had their property potentially defrauded from them, is that our loved ones just need to be aware, first of all, have a keen eye, stay in touch with your mother, father, grandmother, aunt, uncle, whatever it is, and be aware that fraud now in all shapes and sizes is at an all-time high, that there are all sorts of scams and other manipulatory methods whereby folks unfortunately are trying to take advantage of anyone that will just give them the slightest little opening. And so sometimes when our elder loved ones are alone, they're alone a lot, they're at home all day long, all night long, no one is necessarily with them, they are very subject to these kinds of scams and fraudulent activity. The power of attorney we've talked about so often on the program, Lockwood, is a critical ingredient here. If your loved one has a good, solid, durable power of attorney, then they should be able to take action very promptly to stop any kind of abuse. They may not be able to recover things that have already happened, but they at least can put a stop in place relative to anything in the future happening. We have a very wonderful client in our office. He's been a client for a long time. He has a important person in his life that he has cared for greatly. He has even paid for her nursing home expenses and things of that nature. And she, some years ago, put into place a trust whereby she deeded her home, which is a very nice home, here in Carteret County, into that trust. And he, of course, is ultimately the beneficiary of that trust, as one would expect, because he's the one that has been taking care of her. Well, unknown to him, this gentleman who is, if you will, her agent, he discovered that some out-of-towners, if you will, had presented to this elder lady a deed, and she, in fact, signed it, deeding her home to these individuals who were you know, not even from Carteret County. They were from out of state. But we found the deed, and it is recorded. And so here we are now. The home is actually titled in the trust. But the bottom line is that there certainly at this point is kind of a cloud or taint on the title. It's not as clear as we would like it to be. And so Wes now will take over and tell us what he's done about that, what he's doing about that. And I was so pleased when we finally filed something called a Les Pendens, which I'd like for Wes to explain, in the courthouse to let the world know, the public know, that, hey, there's a problem with this, because what if these two out-of-towners went ahead and sold the property and there wasn't any stop in place? So I'll let Wes explain the Les Pendens and then the procedure that he's taking to put this property and get this title clear.
Okay, Wes, and again, we're talking, that was Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. Wes, what are the actions? What do you do?
Right, multiple steps in this file. We've actually started working on this part of the file back probably a year ago.
Whoa.
And the person who came in to see us, Cecil referred to as the good client, the younger person who's been taking care of this basically neighbor, but going so far as to spending his own money on her long-term health care expenses, just almost like a family relationship, brought this issue to us with regard to the deed and with regard to, you know, these people apparently came in and got her to sign it, and she doesn't have the ability to make decisions for herself, and what does this mean, and, you know, all these type things. So our first thing that we did is that, you know, we were concerned about other things that they may attempt to do. So we proceeded with a petition for adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian. And the medical evidence was overwhelming that she did not have the capacity to make decisions for herself. She already had a power of attorney in place naming this individual, the person that we're working with, as her attorney in fact, and her guardian in the event that the court found it appropriate to appoint a guardian. So that guardianship proceeding went very smoothly. It was uncontested, and we were easily able to prove that she lacked capacity, number one, and she needed a guardian, number two. So the court appointed him. So that kind of gave us some comfort that the bleeding had stopped. So we had dealt with that in that way. So moving on to the deed.
Okay, let me interrupt real quickly for you. I've got a bunch of questions for you, Wes. And,
sure,
of course, we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And Wes is telling us about a situation where an individual is stepping in to assist an elderly friend. I'm curious as to the differentiation between a power of attorney and guardianship. Under a power of attorney, isn't that normally requiring approval for any action that's taken, or is this, I'm kind of confused on the issue of where the guardianship steps in. I was thinking that a power of attorney would qualify as guardianship, quickly.
A common misconception there.
Okay, thank you.
So the power of attorney would allow this person, this friend, the named agent under the power of attorney, to make decisions for the elderly person, but it does not strip the rights of the elderly person to make decisions for himself or herself.
Okay, got you. There's the delineation then. The guardianship steps in as the, if you will, the overseer of the individual.
The guardianship is,
okay,
once you have an adjudication of incompetence,
okay,
then, you know, signing deeds, signing checks, you know, credit card, you know, whatever it may be, is basically invalid, or you have recourse. Let's say, you know, if the bank honors a check and they were on notice of the guardianship, then you would have recourse back.
Okay. All right. And then one other quick question.
Yep.
You said a few moments ago the fact that this individual already had a power of attorney. I gather that helped facilitate the move to guardianship?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because the preference under our statute that the clerk must follow, when I say must follow, must take into consideration, is that if there's someone named as the preferred guardian, in the event of a guardianship, that preference is normally indicated in a power of attorney.
Okay.
Then the clerk has to take that into consideration. But at all times, it's whatever is in the best interest of the respondent or the eventual ward.
Okay.
So that's the way that works. So having that power of attorney in place made it very clear that when she was competent and able to sign that power of attorney years ago, her choice during this lucid time, this clear time in her life, was this person, this friend.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, and I want to remind you, if you have any questions about this and other topics, don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, or online at harvellandcollins.com. Wes, I apologize for interrupting, but back to the topic of this particular case where the individual had signed a deed outside of her trust is the best way to describe that.
Yeah, it was interesting because when the deed was presented to us, you know, we recognized that she purportedly signed it in her individual capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So signing it as it with her name, and it was notarized in her name. There was no indication that she signed as trustee. Since the property had been placed in a trust for multiple reasons, she no longer have the capacity or the authority, I should say, to transfer title in that property by her own individual signature. So our knee-jerk reaction to that was to advise the client that these people may think they have something, but they really don't.
Okay.
Now, however, so we attempted, we wanted to stay out of court with this if we could, and we try to do that for our clients if we can.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is we contacted a title company,
right?
Okay, and because that's the way that works in the world of real property. You know, when someone purchases property, the title company will take the opinion of title and then decide whether they're going to insure over the title or not. And
right.
They also pretty much stand ready to assist attorneys when there's questions like this.
That's. Let me interrupt again and just say that I had already made a note. I was curious where title insurance would fit into this. So, a lot of people don't think about the role and importance of title insurance. Can I ask you to just mention that very quickly, Wes? And I apologize for interrupting your thoughts on this, but I think it's an important issue.
Sure, I feel like I'm at the Court of Appeals today.
Okay.
Normally they shoot bullets at you. You're ready to talk about whatever you want to talk about, and they say, nope, that's not what you're going to talk about. Here's what you're going to talk about.
But this is an important issue.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think about title insurance.
Well, I can just mention it briefly and then go back to the explanation. But, you know, the title insurance basically is important because, you know, you may have an issue on your title that pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there could be a survey issue. If there's coverage for that under the policy, there could be someone who's claiming title in your property. There could be an encumbrance on the property that did not get caught, like a deed of trust from years ago that may, you know, it may come up, and someone may be seeking recovery under that deed of trust and the corresponding promissory note. It could be, you know, any of these type things. Now, you know, the closing attorney is responsible for making sure that the title is clear when the property is purchased.
Right.
So they'll do the title work and give an opinion of title to the title insurance company. And based on the strength of that opinion, then the title insurance company will then collect a premium, a one-time premium, and then provide coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes there's limitations on what the coverage is. Like if there's an encroachment, like a fence or something like that, they say, well, we're not getting sure over that because the fence encroaches on your property by foot, you know, or whatever, those type things. So then when an issue comes up on the title, if it does, the title insurance company would have a duty to resolve that issue.
Okay.
And in many cases, there's a subrogation claim against the closing attorney because if the title insurance pays, but they pay because the closing attorney messed up, so to speak, did not capture something or pay something off or whatever it may be, then they may seek recovery against the closing attorney's liability carrier. So that's kind of a maybe a little bit of a long answer to that question. But back to the deed issue. So our knee-jerk reaction was these people don't have anything so on that deed. So we contacted title counsel on that, and their recommendation was that we needed to clean this up in court. Okay, we needed to get a order from the court declaring the effect of that deed and quieting title in favor of our client. So since we now have title insurance, title counsel telling us that's what we need to do, that's the procedure that we've had to proceed with. So, you know, other things, you know, about that would be that title insurance, the title counsel, their primary concern was, as Cecil mentioned a moment ago, what if these people who think they have title, but we think they don't, sell to an unknowing buyer?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call in the world of law a BFP, okay, a bona fide purchaser.
Ooh.
Okay, that's someone who's not on notice. They don't know there's a problem with this title. They pay valuable consideration for the property that has been paid. They have title. You probably are not going to be successful in seeking recovery of your title from a BFP once they have in good faith purchased the property.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So we wanted to file immediately the Liz Pendens, as Cecil mentioned. That is a notice of pending lawsuit,
mm-hmm,
that would eliminate the possibility of a BFP purchasing the property. Because once we put the Liz Pendens on record, then any buyer would be on record notice that there is a cloud on this title.
Right.
So we wouldn't have to wait for a court order and get that court order, and that which takes time, which, by the way, we don't even have yet, but we're working toward that. We wouldn't be able to get the court order first and wait for that and hold our breath that these people don't sell the property in the interim. No, we don't have to do that. We have put the BFP, or we have put the Liz Pendens on record, which we can do, in a day's time, you know, preparation of it, proper filing of it, proper notice, those type things. And then once that's done, then we can proceed with focus, uh-huh, on the litigation and gather our evidence and then proceed forward probably with a, it depends on how things go and what the answer is, the response is, but probably a motion for summary judgment. So we don't have to actually go to a full trial. It would be based on a summary of the evidence, and that would resolve the case, and then we have the title back and we have no questions, and we've done what the title company said needs to be done.
Okay.
So multiple steps there, but you see it all started with what?
You can imagine, Lockwood, that the for Wes and myself, of course, the thing that allowed us to rest better at night was once there was something on public record to show that, look, we're not saying yay or nay on this deed right now. It's up to the court, but we're letting you, the public, know that there's a problem. And that is enough to keep a bona fide purchaser from being able to prevail. So that was a critical step in this file, and that has been filed. And so we feel like we are on, you know, solid ground in terms of a bona fide purchaser issue. And then Wes, of course, proceeds on with the litigation, which is pending, and which, you know, like all litigation, can take many, many, many months,
right,
even as much as a year or more, depositions, discovery, you know, interrogatories, mm-hmm, all sorts of information relative to this purported transaction, who these people are, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all going to end up being a very positive result for our gentleman client who has cared so greatly for this lady for so very long. But these situations evolve. It's fascinating to me how folks from out of town,
mm-hmm.
and they always are from out of town, it seems,
yeah.
or even out of the country, locate these frail and fragile and subject to manipulation type folks. They just have a sense of being able to find them.
I've got a few questions, 1,000 questions, as a matter of fact. I find this being fascinating, and thank you, Wes, for your patience with me. That's Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking with them about the issue of what amounts to elder abuse, but it's actually even beyond that, because I can imagine that this is something that even folks that are competent might fall into when somebody presents them with a potential deed on their property and being confused. But, you know, one of the things I'm curious about, and I've got to go back to the title insurance question here in a few moments, but I am just curious here, Cecil, Wes, apparently these individuals that perpetrated this scam on this lady and the family, I'll use that word, I gather are still, accessible. I'm wondering that question. If so, if there's a proven abuse or scam, is there any way for recovery of the financial expenses, let alone the emotional expenses? Is there any way to, create a penalty or corrective, take corrective action?
Probably. Well, there is. The question is the cost-benefit analysis.
Okay.
That's what you come to in so many of attorneys' files, you have to do that
mm-hmm. okay.
cost-benefit analysis to properly advise your client about recovery. I often tell clients that principal is spelled in two different ways, with a L-E and a A-L mm-hmm. at the end. So, it takes a lot of A-L to approve some L-E sometimes.
Right, gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, are we wanting to go after these people, 10 states away, 1,000 miles away, mm-hmm. and spend thousands of dollars, for the expenses that we have incurred in having to deal with this? Maybe we would have to probably do some background research to make a determination as to whether they have any assets. That kind of takes us also to the criminal side of this.
Uh-huh.
Is there a criminal side of it? And I'm just going to leave that there because I don't think I need to go into that given the fact this is pending. But we do take that into consideration, and we are taking that into consideration in this case.
All right. And then the other question related to the bona fide purchaser, the BFP. I mentioned earlier title insurance. So title insurance does not protect the property from being scammed out from under the owner, I gather.
Well, I mean, it can. It depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
I mean, it normally is something relating to the title, and the title could be, a fraudulent signature.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something that's in the chain of title.
Okay.
That we have to have to address, and so the person thinks they have good title, but they don't have good title because someone forged someone's signature.
Uh-huh.
But that might be, it depends on the circumstance.
Okay.
But yes, that type of situation, you file your claim when you realize that there's a title issue. And I've had, this is just kind of insurance 101. I mean, I've had tons of cases where the insurance has denied coverage, even title insurance has denied coverage. And since we're talking about title insurance, and then I have followed back up on it and provided more information or asserted some pressure on the title company to get them to get in the game
mm-hmm.
so they do defend the case.
Okay.
So, just because a title insurance company has denied your claim and indicated that they're not going to provide a defense because of this, that, or whatever the issue is, that doesn't mean that you should close the book on that.
Okay.
Because if you've got a title issue, then, I mean, that in most cases, you know, the people's home, people's real property, in many cases, that's the most valuable asset that mm-hmm. people have. Most people have been paying them, you know, mortgage, and it's kind of the American way.
Right.
Well, if all of a sudden, you know, your house, your home is in the title, and whether you own that, you know, completely has become an issue, you know, becomes questionable, and then the title insurance company is not willing to help you with that, and you paid a premium on that, then don't close the book on it. Go to an attorney who can analyze it more closely and put some pressure on the title company, you know, to do what they're required to do.
All right. So
that's kind of insurance 101, though.
Okay.
We're coming up on hurricane season, and you know, back in Florence and 5 years ago, let's hope we don't have a hurricane. I guess we're in hurricane season, but at any rate, you know, these hurricane claims, I mean, how many of those did we have where folks, you know, were mm-hmm. not paid what they should have been paid, but then once we got involved in the case, then we got them, you know, hundreds of thousands additional in many cases, and even more than that in many cases, because of properly analyzing the case and the damages and submitting it properly to the appropriate procedure. So it's kind of, I'm kind of getting off topic a little bit, but in insurance, I think what, in my opinion, insurance issues have gotten to a point where just because you're denied, don't dare close the book on your rights under your insurance policy.
Okay.
You've been paying for it.
Okay. That's, I think it's an important story. And of course, we're talking obviously about the issue of scams, particularly related to property scams. We're near the end of the program, but I want to go over this with you real quickly. So coming out of this conclusion of this conversation today, number one, you pointed out Wes Cecil, and that is, power of attorney is very helpful when you have to move forward to the issue of guardianship. And you did distinguish the two between a power of attorney and a guardianship. The second item, and I think this is pretty important, is an issue of, I'll say, speed. The fact that this individual taking care of the lady, the elderly lady, recognized something and reacted quickly, came to you to get your advice and guidance on that. And I think that's an important aspect of this as well. I can appreciate that some family members, and I'm going to pick on them, as that children, may look at it and say, well, it was a minor item, nothing to worry about. We need to worry about all of these things, then, I gather from this.
No doubt about it. And like you said, the client coming to us when he noticed the issue, that's life.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You know, prevention, you know, an ounce of prevention is mm-hmm. worth a pound of cure. And if he had sat back and not done anything, and we had a BFP out there, then we'd have a whole different situation on our hands.
So. That is scary. All right. Cecil, you were going to say, I apologize, I interrupted you.
Well, like we've said so many times, Lockwood, it's just important to stay vigilant. It's important to have your documents looked at every, you know, 3 to 5 years, 7 years at the outset. Are your documents up to date? You know, look at your account beneficiaries. Uh-huh. Look at your verification. Is your tax notice, is there anything about it that's suspicious? Just stay vigilant in all aspects of your life, your banking, your accounting, your stocks, your bonds, your retirement accounts, and yes, even your land holdings. Mm-hmm. See, when we pulled the tax notice on this lady, this case file that we've been discussing today, the tax office had already changed the name to the name of the fraudulent folks. There are red flags out there usually, and as soon as anything like that evolves, seek legal advice immediately. Absolutely.
That's one of the benefits of the program. And again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And folks listening to this program, I'm going to say to you, don't hesitate to give them a call. I think you know, it's maybe temporary, it may be a simple situation, but let them find out. That is Harvell and Collins, and as always, to remind you, the number 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, thanks very much for your time today.
Okay, thank you, Lockwood.
Let's talk legal on the Talk Station.